honest, yes, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So there's a lot of people worried about the inter-county season, lads, based on the fact that Laois, Offaly and Kildare are locked down and what's going to happen in a situation for county football. But John Fogarty had a piece in the Examiner during the week and he kind of lays those worries to rest a little bit because NPHET have said that in the case of the inter-county season being played, Laois have to take on Dublin in the first round of the hurling. Offaly take on Carlow in the first round of football. Those games will go ahead. So county teams will be able to travel outside their counties. I presume elite sport would be the reasoning for that. And they'll be able to play full contact. So, like, I mean, there's no worries on local lockdowns in a case of the inter-county season going ahead. So that's a nice kind of thing to hear, Conan, because straight away I'm thinking you can't go outside your county. The inter-county season is completely screwed, but it's not.
And that's it. Like when Micheál Martin talked about elite sport, like the first thing I thought of was inter-county GAA. Like that's the top level sport in Ireland. It's the biggest sport. So yeah, it would definitely be catered for. And I know it would be frustrating. Like still, even at that stage, we'll have probably no fans, especially for those games because of the travel restrictions remain or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's still worth it. Like, you know, you look at the Premier League, like it was just good having the Champions League now as well. It's good having football. Like when you have the choice of not having it or having it with no fans, then you're always going to take the latter, I think.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, it needs to be said. I didn't mention that those games will be behind closed doors in that case. It's just the big worry, obviously, would be if Dublin went into lockdown. And, well, we don't know what the restrictions on the crowds are anyways, you know, so, you know, we can't really talk about that yet. But, like, I mean, I suppose the talk is that the inter-county season will go ahead. I wanted to go ahead, even if there's a small percentage of games behind closed doors. That's okay with me. The pitches in Laois, Offaly and Kildare at least have reopened. So the GAA shut everything down and then had the GAA's COVID advisory group met with representatives from the three counties that we're talking about, and they've decided that they're gone back a phase. So the pitches can open and training can resume in a non-contact basis with a minimum of 15 people, while indoor meetings should involve no more than 6 people for more than 3 households. So that's good news for people in Laois, Offaly, Kildare, at least. We know the cases in Laois are dropping. No new cases again yesterday, which is crazy. Laois GAA chairman Peter O'Neill has been asking the GAA to lobby the government. And this, Peter O'Neill and myself wouldn't exactly be bosom buddies, but the last couple of things I've heard from Peter O'Neill have definitely made a lot of sense. So he's been asking the GAA to lobby the government to get the lockdown period reduced from 16 to 14 days. And that would make that instead of Laois GAA losing 3 weekends, they'll lose 2 weekends. Now, that makes perfect sense to me. Like, I mean, the Laois cases in the last 5 days, Conor, have been 1, 12, 0, 1 and 0. You know, like, I mean, Laois cases peaked on August the 2nd, and there's been a constant kind of drop in them since then. Maybe one day spiked up again, but dropped again. Like, I mean, there is no reason. I would get rid of the Laois lockdown now. Because we're behind Kildare and Offaly. We're not as severe as Laois and Offaly. We've just been bundled in with them and we're coming out. And it has to be said, due to brilliant work by the contact tracers and the testers, that Laois is under control. If I had my way, next weekend we'd be given the green light. But Peter O'Neill is asking for at least some sort of compromise, not even to give us this weekend coming, but don't ruin the following weekend again on Laois.
Yeah, by the time that following weekend comes around, I suppose you'll have a lot more data. You mentioned there the last 5 days, Willie. So by the time next weekend arrives, you'll have over 10 days data to support that. And you're only talking about 2 days as well, especially when you consider that the lockdown was brought in on a Friday. So that immediately affected games in the Friday, Saturday, Sunday of that weekend. So hopefully by next week. The GAA, you know, at least GAA be in a position to stage games that weekend, because the championship will be in danger of getting away from you then if you're missing 3 weekends in a row.
Yeah, but that's the thing, because now they're inquiring with Croke Park about whether they can actually forfeit their last two league games. I think this is a complete non-runner as far as I'm concerned. Like, Leash are both in the promotion hunt and the relegation hunt. There is no possible way this is a runner as far as I'm concerned, Conor. Like, I mean, I don't see how Croke Park can say, yeah, just work away with your club games those weekends, let's just ruin our whole Division 2 of the National League. You know, and Leash could potentially be relegated on the back of not fulfilling those two games.
Yeah, it's just weird though. For me, like, I know we talked there about it, you talked there about like the Intercounty Cup game coming back, and it's great that it is coming back. To me, it just seems so far away at the moment. You know, like, I know it's only, like, it's going to resume early October, but given how quickly things have changed in the last few weeks particularly, it's hard to even envisage. You know, it's hard to be nearly preparing for inter-county games when it's subject to so much change in the time since. I mean, if you were to be told 3 weeks ago that Laois, Kildare and Offaly would be locked down, you know, it's just that these things develop so quickly, and then you're getting into winter season and all this sort of stuff. But you're right in terms of, like, on the face of it, that if those games are to be cancelled and Laois have as much, if not more, to play for than anybody in the entire league. So if their games are under threat, that's the entire league under threat. So,
well, yeah, they're not, the thing about it is, Conan, is that they're not under threat. They're actually, Laois are asking to not fulfil them. You know, it's not that they're under threat. They will be allowed to play them. Like, there's no restrictions on them being played. It's just Laois are actually asking. I think, like Niall Handy said, who's the Laois secretary, he said, we're possibly looking at withdrawing for the league, or at least see what the consequences there would be were we to do that. It would give us an extra 2 weekends. I just think he's just throwing that out there like that. This is a non-runner as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and there's two problems with it, because, like, A, it disrupts the integrity of the league. Like, you know, does Division 1 and Division 3, you know, also have to be impacted by that? Because if there's no relegation from Division 2, or maybe Laois just go straight down. But on top of that, like, regardless of relegation, if they ended up getting relegated, I'm sure Mike Cork would prefer two games, even if they lost both of them and got relegated before the championship. You know, they would rather those two league games rather than going into a championship. And Laois, I'm right in thinking they play Louth or Longford in the first round, who play each other the week before that as well. So they'd actually be going into a championship match with Louth or Longford, who've had three competitive games under their belts. It's not a good position to be in from a Laois point of view.
Yeah, no, it definitely isn't. So missing the last two games, like you say, will be a huge blow to manager Mike Quirk. And he actually joins us on the line now. Mike, how's it going?
Good, Colin. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. Clear, that would be a bit of a drastic action to take, not fulfilling the league games.
It would, yeah. And I think, to be fair to Niall and the county board, they're just trying to get every kind of option on the table, really, to enable them to make a plan for the clubs and to see exactly where they're going. So, I mean, we've made the point that obviously we're very much opposed to voluntarily, you know, making ourselves relegated in Division 3, and that's not on the cards. It's really just, I suppose, a fact-finding thing for themselves to see what options they have, because losing 3 weekends in such a tight window is obviously making their job very, very difficult.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. But, like, I suppose those two last league games are massively important to Laois, because Laois are straight into a quarter-final, and Louth-Longford, who we play, will have a game the week before that game. So they're absolutely vital from a preparation point of view.
Oh, they are. And I mean, look, they're vital from, you know, we're still under the impression that, you know, if we win two games that we're going to be within the mix of possibly getting up to Division 1. And look, and I know you could lose two games, you could also be in the mix to go down. And that's the way that league has been. And it's been a fantastic and exciting competition for us. And the players have really, really enjoyed it. And we just want the opportunity to, even if it is going to be, which it is now, it's going to be a very, very limited preparation for us. And we're not going to have anywhere near the kind of time that we'd like to have to really give a great account of ourselves. But whatever it is, we just want the opportunity to get those games played and to really see where we go after those two, which, you know, for what the players have put into it, it's something that they definitely deserve, you know?
Yeah, no. So what are you doing at the moment? You're just getting to as many club games. I know there isn't any now for the next 2 weeks, but you're going to try. Yeah. You're just going to have to judge lads on club form. We were talking about the club game's only 60 minutes. You know, a county player could be marking a maybe limited club player. It's not the easiest thing to get a handle on their form.
No, it's not. But it's the only barometer we have. I mean, we haven't seen guys now since, you know, what you're going to be talking five months or whatever by the time we're back playing ball. And you have to give guys the incentive of saying if this is somebody who hasn't really been in our group before now and they really put up their hand with a big performance and they back it up a couple of weeks in a row, then it'd be very unfair not to take a look at that guy, you know. And yeah, and obviously you've got your bankers, the guys that you know, regardless, even if they haven't a great club championship, you know they're the guys that you're going to be having with you. But then there's certainly a lot of floaters in that as well that you want to give the opportunity to other guys to come into the group, you know. And I think the way fellas have been, you know, through the whole lockdown and everything, they're bursting to perform and to play well with their club and to give a massive account to themselves, because sure, all of us are really frustrated with the whole thing and we want some outlet to be able to go perform. And I think you would see the standard of the clubs would be even better now because of guys with that kind of hunger and availability, I suppose, to the clubs.
So what are you doing to get to club games? Like, I mean, you're down in Kerry and they're on Friday, Saturday, Sundays. You staying up the weekend or are you sending your management team to different games?
No, well, like, I suppose the first weekend is the one that just we got scuppered. But, you know, we don't. Kearns was going to the game on Thursday and I watched it on the stream. And I was coming up on Saturday. I was doing a session in the Harps, actually, for a couple of coaches from different clubs in that area to come over. And we were doing an hour or so, a session there with their team. And then I was going to the doubleheader on Saturday night and staying up to watch the games again on Sunday. And then obviously on Friday, the whole thing got went a little bit sideways on us and I got locked down and the football went out the window. So that was the first real opportunity we had to get up and watch some meaningful kind of club championship action. And it was kind of taken away before we knew it, you know?
Yeah, no, I was reading that actually, that you're going up to the different clubs and coaching the coaches. So this is an interesting one and it's a very good idea. Like, I mean, obviously you can't get your hands on inter-county players, but at the same time, you could maybe give some ideas to their coaches, like not try to take over, you know, and potentially maybe get some information to them that way.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, to be fair, it was something that we had kind of spoken about long before any pandemic came on the scene. And once the league was over, we had a kind of a schedule where we wanted to do some work with the club coaches. And again, not in a way to dictate to them or to whatever, but just to provide some information and to see if guys would come in and pick it up and then bring it down to the clubs. The idea is just that you're broadening the base of talent that you have, really. And if guys are all, you know, at club level doing, you know, your best case work in terms of game based, and then Tom Hargrove's obviously coming in then as well with the physical side of things and really giving a good steer in terms of how you get guys fit and the best way to do that in terms of strength training and all that. And look, like, why not make that information available to all the clubs as opposed to just keeping it for the senior inter-county team? The more guys that have that kind of information, you're hoping longer term the better the standard of players that are going to become available to you.
Yeah, that's a great idea. How has it been received by the clubs that you visit? I presume they're delighted with it.
Yeah. I mean, like we did a workshop above in O'More Park and it was good. You know, there was a lot of phone calls after and guys asking about this and that and I just think it makes sense. I think if you're going in anywhere and you want to improve the standard, you're not going to do that through one senior team and the broader you can make the net, the better chance you have of catching a couple of fish. And again, you know, Tom, I think, you know, we've got a really good crew and I think to have those guys available to help out the clubs, even if it's just over the phone and somebody's asking about a game or a drill or a running session or whatever it is, and you can give them a bit of a steer, then sure, look, it only makes sense, really, you know.
That is a big worry for inter-county managers all over the country, is that a player might be from, no disrespect to an intermediate or a junior A club or, you know, even junior B if that happens a little bit less, but they go back to a pretty kind of amateur setup and you can't get your hands on them.
Yeah, that's an issue. And I suppose in some counties you've had a situation where, you know, maybe the guys have been forced to train with a county team and the clubs wouldn't have access to them. And we didn't want to go down that line. We wanted to go the other way and try and support the clubs and improve the clubs and help out where we could there. And still, our guys have the GPS units on them and they get their report. And, they, you know, and Tom gives us all a briefing of what fellas are doing. And some guys are given a nudge to maybe do a little bit more high-speed stuff. And some guys are told to maybe pull back a small little bit. And they're able to know, we're able to kind of keep a handle on them, at least physically in that sense, using the technology and stuff, which is great. And it's been a huge resource. And Tom Hargrove has been massive in that regard. But in general, like I still think if you can have a little bit of trust in the clubs and you can help them out and help them deliver a kind of best practice. And obviously it's only going to help them in their ambitions to win a club championship or whatever it is, or compete in a club championship. And then you're obviously benefiting your own players and other guys maybe that haven't even been involved with you.
Yeah, you mentioned some counties that might be training already. Like, I mean, I have it on good word, Donegal are training, but I don't want you to comment. You don't have to comment on that, but I do think that, like, I wouldn't have much of a problem with county teams getting the players for one night a week, and they're with their clubs every other night. You know, they're focused on the clubs, but just to keep them in a group together, like, you know, September the 14th. When some players have been knocked out of the championship, I don't know, inter-county's been painted as the enemy where they could work together.
Absolutely, yeah. I think there would be no problem with guys training with the inter-county team one night a week on a Tuesday and going with their club on a Thursday and playing their club game on the weekend. But if that would be the case, then that would be across the board, and every single county knows that that's the case, and that's the story in every county. Whereas at the moment, you've got. Well, I'm not sure what it is at the moment. I'm not sure if you're talking about Donegal. I don't know. I know for a fact I'm down here in Kerry, and I know they're not doing anything. And but if you have a situation where some counties are doing that and they're getting a head start on other people who are not doing it, then that's when you run into problems. And like, again, I would love that scenario that you highlighted. Maybe a Tuesday with the county and the rest with the club. That'd be super for everybody. But the problem is that's just not the way it's being done, and it's a little bit uneven then obviously when you come to play it.
Yeah, because especially for you, like, I mean, your first year as an inter-county manager, it's been a disastrous year really, because you get off to such a good start in the league. I'm sure you would have done a lot of physical work before the league, like, I mean, and with a plan after the league to get some kind of maybe tactical work or whatever. I'm thinking of poor Desi Farrell, who only got the job at the end of November. Do you know what I mean? It's for managers in their first year, it's a complete disaster.
It's been a great choice of mine, yeah, to start off during the pandemic. Yeah, really, really, really picked a good one. Yeah, sure. It's been bonkers. Yeah, it's been crazy. And like, the only kind of solace I can take from the whole thing is that, you know, no matter how experienced or inexperienced you are, nobody has gone through this kind of a scenario before. So yeah. Everybody is learning on the fly, even the most experienced of managers, I suppose. But and like everybody else, then, come, you know, the technology has been a great help. And sure, like, nobody knew Zoom existed like 3 months ago or 4 months ago. And now we're able to, you know, even planning forward, you're kind of saying, well, we can knock real value out of this moving forward, where we're alleviating time pressures off guys here to do video sessions or to do meetings instead of bringing them in for another night. Let's have a 20 minutes on Zoom here and knock out whatever we need to do and get it done and do our video session on this. And guys can be at home and, you know, drinking a cup of tea and, you know, in their sitting room, as opposed to having to put on their gear and get in the car and come down to, you know, it's all those kind of things. I think down the line, we'll see a benefit from the time intensity that it takes to play at that level. And sure, look, for me and for everybody else, like, it's just a matter of you got to adapt and adjust it as quickly as you can. And luckily, we've made some job of it, I suppose.
Yeah, there's nothing more demoralising after a Tuesday night training session to get word during the session that there's a video session on after it or something like that. You realise you won't be home
Killer.
Till 12 o'clock.
Yeah, it is though. I mean, that is funny. And we used to do the same thing. Like, you'd cringe, like, because you used to go in and know that there was... And back in the day, sure, it used to be like you put in a tape, like, and you'd be... it's just crazy stuff, you know. And
yeah.
Whereas now you're saying, well, we can make snippets of this, lads, and we can be at home on Friday evening, and let's get together at 8 o'clock on Zoom, and we can have our forwards group here, we can have our defenders group here, and we could do it for 15, 20 minutes, highlight a couple of key things, have a quick chat about it, and go away about your day. And it's really not knocking any time or, you know, it's not forcing guys to come down together collectively. Like, we've this thing in our head about we have to be collective like 97 times a week, and we don't, you know. And I think down the line we'll see a bounce out of this as well. It'll help us, you know, with the things that we've discovered, I think, through the pandemic.
Yeah, maybe it is. I was reading, you said there's a big culture shock when you go from club football to inter-county. The amount of little departments you need to square off. Which departments was kind of a shock to you?
Just the volume, I suppose, and the mass of everything. You know, we like at club stuff, you're the guy that's doing everything to a certain degree. You know, you're you know, the training, the physical side of things, even and everything. It's just, it's really the manager centric at club level. Whereas when you get it to the county, now the big challenge is, like, I have some great fellas like Owen Kearns and Morris Brown, probably like Morris Horn, like who was manager of Limerick before. He's a great guy, really, really into his coaching. And I didn't want selectors who were going to, you know, lean against the wire, smoking a cigarette and watch the session and miss a couple of sessions come down. I want the guys like that were going to be actively involved in the coaching and really driving on that kind of side of things. And the guys that I got were super, like no more than Dan Nelligan, who looks after the goalkeepers, who's an unbelievably diligent and hardworking guy, and the work he puts in with those fellas. So all the guys that I have involved, like, are really actively involved in the coaching. But if you're going to have that, then you've got to design and plan your sessions and your whole structure around keeping these fellas involved all the time and making sure that they have an active role in it. And that's a challenge in itself. And then you're dealing with all the other side of things, you know, the player welfare stuff, you're dealing with county board issues, you're dealing with under 20s, and you're dealing with all these other little different angles that people want to take time out of you for, when really the whole gig is about that hour and a half or whatever you have them on the field, and maximizing that time and making sure that you're delivering the best quality you can so the fellas are improving all the time, and hopefully then that goes and shows in the game. So it's just different, and it's the size of the whole thing, and the amount of people that you're dealing with is obviously far greater. But it's a great challenge, though, man. It's really enjoyable so far. We just like to see where it takes us in the next couple of months.
Yeah, exactly. Did you ring anyone for advice or anything before you got into it? I'm thinking of Emma Fitzmaurice, who, you know, I presume he was very well on top of his gig by the time he finished up.
Yeah, no, I didn't really. I spoke to my own, you know, small circle of friends, I suppose, about it, really, and sought their counsel. But then, you know, I figured it wasn't going to be an opportunity that was going to come around very often, possibly to manage it into senior into county level, and the fact that it was outside the county probably was attractive to me as well. It was something that you were really going outside your comfort zone, and you know, I can remember the first day I went up and I met, you know, Brian Breen, and you know, he was leading me around the place and telling me, to showing me the people that I needed to know and different things. And so I went into a situation where I was meeting about 60 people, and I never met any of them before in my life, and never spoke to any of them. So you're trying to, you know, you're starting off at ground zero there, trying to develop relationships with people and learn people's names, and then you have, that's even before you start figuring out who players are and what's going on. So it was just a complete, you know, jumping into the deep end. And but it was exciting, you know. I think the way the National League is, and the way that everything is structured there to start the year, it's just frantic, and it's, you know, it's brilliant. And luckily we had a pretty decent start to things, and once you do that, it makes things a little bit easier for you.
Yeah, well, I suppose you did pick your backroom team pretty well. Owen Kearns, who was there before and would have known the players. Morris Brown would know the club scene in Laois very well. And Morris Horn, who would have had intercounty experience. Like, I mean, you did well, yeah, on your backroom team. And obviously your strength and conditioning coach as well. Tom Hargroves. Yeah, so, like, I mean, you did well picking the management team.
Yeah, and again, I mean, the boys were fantastic. Like, Owen was obviously involved with John Chukwu over the previous couple of years, and again, loves that hands-on coaching stuff. Morris Brown would have managed Collection to the county final the previous year, and Kerry guy, I would have known him years and years ago. He was involved. He was probably in the IT when you were there. Actually, he was a Gaelic football officer in the college for a year or so back in the early 2000s. Morris Brown was, you know.
All right.
But he's been up there now, obviously, for a long time, and I have a good handle. And again, Morris Horn's experience was crucial. Like, and then finding Tom Hargroves was just like, he was the you know, the 50 euros in your pocket that, you know, you put that pence in the press, you take it out, you didn't realize it was there. He was a gift, you know, to find Tom, because Tom was obviously coming from a professional background, and everything he's done has been of a really, really professional standard, and he's been a great guy to learn from and to be challenged by. And you know, it's a great setup. And I think look, you know, the crucial thing is, from the player's point of view, like, I think the training is pretty good for those guys, and it's challenging for those, and it's enjoyable, and it's all based on the concept of the game. It's nothing, you know, we're not killing fellas running or doing anything like that. Everything is about improving them as decision makers and as footballers. And I think if you do that, you can go as far as you can.
Yeah. Really. Exactly. When the draw was made, I thought the draw wasn't kind to either Loud, Longford or Laois because Dubs coming up next. But now, I suppose, with the pandemic, it won't be in Croke Park, in a full Croke Park with the Hills singing their name. It'll be in, probably in a neutral venue with feck all Dubs in it. And now I'm daring to dream, potentially, if we can get over Loud.
Yeah, and it'll also be in October or the start of November.
Which, yeah, and a mucky day.
I know. Yeah, we'll stick with Westmeath and Fermanagh for now on. Hopefully we can, you know, hopefully we can get over those ones, and then look, it's exciting, man. I remember having this conversation with John O'Loughlin about a month ago, and we were just talking about how exciting it would be. You know, first of all, if you're lucky enough to win that first game and to face Dublin, and even if you don't, if you're playing Longford or Louth and you could be above in Croke Park under lights on a Saturday evening, you know, it's not something that we're going to probably see again in our lifetime where we're playing championship at this time of year in these kind of situations under the constraints that we've been under. So, it's a kind of a once in a lifetime experience and something that I think if we can embrace it and do as much as we can in the short window that we have, sure, it's going to be something we'll always remember.
Yeah, no, it definitely will. Mike, thanks very much for taking the call and best of luck for the rest of the year.
No problem, Colin. Thanks.
All right, great stuff from Mike there. So we mentioned St. Lomond's manager couldn't travel last weekend, and the county board have told the clubs that managers and coaches living in the lockdown counties should take personal responsibility and not attend games in Westmeath in the coming weeks. So that's a straight directive, even though the Lomond's manager did take personal responsibility before that. Interesting to see what happens this week, Conan, in the Dublin Club Championship. Anthony Rainbow, Kildare native, and Ballyboden manager. Now they're playing Whitehall Columbkills, so I'd say Anthony Rainbow can sit up, put his feet up, and have a couple of beers, whatever night that is, and he'll be okay. The Thomas Davis manager, interestingly, is from Kildare as well, and his son plays for Thomas Davis. Again, they could both have a couple of cans at home in front of the television because they're playing Ballymun Kickham. So it'll be interesting to see whether these lads go to it or not. It's not a bad weekend for either manager to not have to go.
Yeah, Anthony Rainbow's in a position where it's like Dublin playing the O'Byrne Cup. He can send a second coach out to look after the team. They're going to win anyway. He's going to come back and bite me. But Thomas Davis, like, I feel a bit sorry for them because like they have a must-win match as well against Ballymun, and it's on TV. And it's like they got to the final last year. They beat some big guns along the way. I know they haven't been going as well this year, but if they get their act together and they win, they can go through to the quarterfinals. So, the fact that they're down men or down their manager is a tough one. But maybe that's just part of what the season is. Like we talked about it a couple of months ago when we were sort of thinking, what's the point in playing this season? Because like there's going to be a club that gets infected by it and there's going to be something that comes up. And now we have this case where three counties are infected by it. And maybe it just has to go on without them. And that's part of it. Like, if you can accept that there's a risk, then you just carry on while you can, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting if any of these club managers, as they're crossing the border and they get stopped at the checkpoint, because you are allowed travel outside the county for work. So will they show the receipts of the payments they're receiving from these clubs as proof to the police that I'm traveling to my second job? And they will get through the checkpoint if they can prove that they're being paid. But how many of them will want to go down that road?
Do those receipts exist, Willie? Do they? Or
he could just show the brown envelope then, maybe, once he has put under his mattress.
What if you travel? What if the manager, to be an interesting situation, if the manager worked in Dublin during the day and he had to travel to Dublin to work, and he's like, well, I'm in Dublin anyway, I'll just go to the game. Would that be considered?
Then he's completely covered, right? Sure, just hang around after work and go to the match or whatever. I'd say you get covered if you can prove you work in Dublin, maybe. Yeah, that's probably one way out of it. Whether it's a Saturday night job at 7 o'clock, you wouldn't be leaving work. It's hard to know, but it is going to be interesting. Like this weekend is easy. I'm sure there's lots of other managers, but just from the ones we pointed out, this is not a big weekend for them to probably take a risk. It's not like Ballyboden are playing in a county final or anything where they would actually need their manager. Like I mentioned at the start of the show, Cratlore and Bother Lads, they've had 6 positive cases. So they've had to pull out of their second round hurling match against Aroge. That was last Sunday. And I think it's six players. So a lot of the clubs have backed Kratlow, saying it could be any of them that would be in the same boat. On the back of the Kratlow positives, 18 Clonagad footballers who played Kratlow in a Junior A Championship have gone into self-isolation, as have all the Kratlow players, which means both clubs won't be able to resume any activity until the 22nd, 23rd of August. That's pushing that back a lot. That's the most cases now, Conan, I've seen in the one club outside, maybe. Even in the Derry ones, I don't think there was more than six positives in each club, was there?
No, and a lot of those were just sort of people preempting that there might be. They were going into self-isolation, and then that there was either one or none in a lot of cases. But that Kratlow one's scary because, yeah, one player had it, and then somewhere along the way, five further players picked up the virus. And I know we chatted to Stevie from Kalevi, and he was like, you know, saying it was a car journey where three of them picked it up. And that was a bit more comforting, knowing, like, you know, that's exactly where it came from. And we've been very, like, encouraged by the stats from outdoor activity. There's not really much passing along, but yeah. I would like to know, I'd be interested to know where those five further ones are coming from, because, like, yeah, you're right, it could be any other club, and I think everybody be looking at that with a bit of fear.
Yeah, so the Clare Championship now is going to be definitely put back a couple of weeks until all that gets sorted out. In Longford, there's a bit of a controversy here. So, like, I mean, this seems unbelievably strict. As far as I'm concerned, it's a 48-week ban for the county champions, Killoa Young Emmets. This is Mickey Quinn's club, Sean McCormack as well. They didn't pay a fine of €750. So they didn't field a team in an under-16 match. I think it was last January. And they had reasons not to field the team. And they contacted the county board before the game, saying that they wouldn't be fulfilling the fixture because of an outstanding issue, and that hadn't been dealt with. So the date of the penalty to be paid was 31st of July. But Killoa appealed that fine of €750 to the Leinster GA Hearings Committee, but the hearing never took place because of the coronavirus restrictions. So the county board, when the 31st of July, even though it was being appealed, when the 31st of July came, they banned the club for 48 weeks, the county champions. Like, I mean, this seems absolutely crazy, especially when it's already been appealed to the Leinster GA Hearings Committee. I can't see this. Killoa are actually supposed to be playing next Friday night. You know, I can't see this ban being upheld, at least until that hearing has been heard, Conan. Like, I mean, it doesn't make any sense, really. And number two, you know, 48-week ban over not paying £750. Holy shit.
Yeah, for a whole club as well, from an under-16 game. Like, it's very harsh. And when I read this, without knowing the full facts, but, like, it seems very, very harsh, and I got a bit annoyed at it. Like, because you've spoken a lot about, like, sometimes there's amateurism in a lot of county boards. And, like, I've had experience myself as an underage coach where you don't get what you want from the county board. Like, you know, where the rules have been completely broken, and they're happy enough to just sort of let it go. And then you have to go to the Ulster Council, and then things suddenly get overturned because it's that black and white sometimes. Like, you know, sometimes it's just looking at the rule book and seeing what it is. So I think it's madness, like, you know, what can happen and how unjust some clubs can be treated. And it's good to see that they're heading down the road down to the Leinster Council to try and get things sorted. And this seems like, yeah, they really have jumped the gun in Longford.
Yeah, and the stupidity of the county board, Conor. Like, I mean, we're in a situation where we've a very, very limited time frame to play off this championship, right? This is under appeal with the Leinster GAA. Don't jump the gun. Let your bloody championship get played out. Now Killoa might not be able to play next Friday night. The championship's all going to get put back because they have the right to an appeal. And your whole championship is made of balls of it. Instead of just letting due process take its place, wait for the Leinster Hearings Committee as ruling on it. And when you get your ruling on it, you can either let them off or ban them for the 48 weeks then.
Yeah, absolutely. Were they very quick to impose the 48-week ban after the date of appeal? Do you know what I mean? It'd be one thing imposing this ban if Killoa had lost the appeal, you know, and then they said they'd impose the 48-week ban. But it looks absolutely terrible. Like, you know, when I saw a 48-week ban, especially, you know, 48-week bans for an entire club aren't imposed for nothing. Like, you know, they're usually very serious issues. And it seems here, just from doing a bit of background, and like, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but it seems that, like, Killoa have a very strong stance about their reason for not paying that fine in the first place. You know what I mean? It's not over a trivial issue. So just at the moment, but, like, in terms of, like, holding up the entire championship, you know, over something like this at this time, like with everything else that's going on. Do you know what I mean? It just seems absolutely ridiculous. And it's good to hear that, like, I just heard the Kilo chairman was saying that they've had loads of support from other clubs in Longford. So that the support that they have from within their own county, and them taking the case to the Leinster Council as well, looks like it'll, you know, it'll have a positive impact, at least for the time being. I can't, the championship isn't going to be held up over it, or if there is, everyone will be up in arms, rightfully so.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I have a kind of a picture in my head of the type of people who have decided that this 48 week ban was a good idea. Like, I seriously have it. Like, it might be right or it might be wrong, but in my experience of being immersed in GA all my life, I would say I know exactly the type of people we're dealing with here. Like,
that's why I was getting annoyed reading the story, because I can just picture it. I can picture them. I can just picture them not having any, like, entertaining any of what they're saying as well. Like, you know, they just don't want to listen. And 48 weeks is, like, equivalent to what you get for hitting a referee. You know, for a whole club, they get that. It's crazy.
Yeah, over some money, over some money. It must have been a contentious reason they had for not pulling out of that, or for pulling out of the under 16 game anyway. Come here, Conal McCann has been on all the media. He must have done some sort of a Zoom call or something, because his quotes are everywhere. And one thing that I can't really understand is he says, I know that some county teams are training at the moment. It needs to be a level playing field. Some teams are training away. I know that for a fact. And we're not doing anything. It should give them an advantage. I think there was supposed to be a sanction for counties that trained, but it doesn't seem to matter. What can you do? Now, this is something I can't really understand. We know James McCartan had hinted at it last weekend. Now, James McCartan is an ex inter-county manager. I think he might be over the minors or something and down. I'm not too sure. But Conal McCann is a current Tyrone player. His rivals are training. His rivals are trying to get an advantage on Tyrone to beat them in the championship. And Conal McCann won't say who they are. He's covering for them. Now, I don't know, Conal, can you get your head around that? I would be singing from the rooftops. I seriously would be. These are your rivals. You don't like these people. Well, you don't like them on the field anyways. So why not say it? Like, I mean, I've had a good word that Donegal are training once a week. Like, I mean, I've no problem saying that. And another thing is, I've been definitely sure on the podcast about saying I wouldn't even have too much of a problem with the county team training once a week, as long as, you know, the focus was on the clubs, but a get together once a week. I'm not necessarily criticizing Donegal here or anything. I'm just saying they are doing it. They are supposed to be doing it. But why is there this big secrecy around the whole thing?
Well, I can sort of understand where McCann's coming from, because I've heard about another county, and I don't want to say because I haven't been able to back it up myself. Do you know what? I've heard it from a good source, but, you know, it's secondhand. So maybe McCann's is the same thing, whereas he trusts the source.
Oh, he said he knows for a fact. This is why I'm criticizing McCann.
Then that is different. But what I want to know here, I can still understand why, like, a current player doesn't want to come out, because you can imagine some of the backlash will be against him and call him a snitch and touts out, as they would say up there. But what I want to know, is there anyone in the GA, you know, who's reaching out to Conal McCann and saying, you know, what have you heard? Like, are they asking him? Like, you know, are they interested in him saying this? And are they going to investigate? And, you know, are you talking about Donegal or like whoever McCann's talking about, it might be Donegal. Like, are the GA keen to find this out and try and stop it?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, because there are supposed to be sanctions if it happens. Again, I have to repeat myself, I wouldn't be overly critical of them if they're training once on a Tuesday, which is what they're supposed to be doing, and the clubs get all the rest of the week, the weekends and all that. That's no big deal to me. It's just, I suppose, it's not supposed to be allowed. So I don't know. Maybe it's a touts out Ulster thing, Conan. You can explain that maybe a bit more. not going to be a grass. I actually tweeted about this morning, and people keep sending me IRA touts out. So it's a classic. Paul Clark, lads, he's walked. He's out the door. So Paul Clark has been around the Dublin scene for a long time. He was in with Pillar Caffrey. And he was in, I'm fairly sure, the last 2 years under Jim Gavin, or maybe the last 3 years. He's a coach, and that's his qualifications. That's what he does. And the Irish Independent has this. Apparently, Clark wasn't spending as much time doing the coaching as he was under Jim Gavin. So, like, I mean, you wonder why Desi kept him on in a reduced role. I don't know, Conor. Like, I mean, he's obviously not happy. You know, a little bit like down in Kerry. What's your man's name down in Kerry? Who?
Donny Buckley?
Yeah, Donny Buckley, sorry. Yeah, similar to that, even though Peter Keane brought him in. But Desi Farrell didn't bring Paul Clark in. He kind of kept him on, maybe for a bit of continuity or whatever. But he's out of there now.
I couldn't help raise an eyebrow just at the kind of the timing of it, Wooly. And just based on the last conversation you're just having, did Paul Clark just decide now that he wasn't doing much hands-on coaching? Like when would he have been doing this hands-on coaching, considering that Dublin haven't meant to be training for the last, I don't know how many months? Or was it just he had a lot of time to think during lockdown, or when Dublin weren't training, he decided to walk away? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Give me one coach that is doing a lot of hands-on coaching at the moment.
Maybe somebody in Donegal.
Same with Jack McCaffrey as well.
Stephen Rochford. Well, that's it. Yeah, you're right. Jack McCaffrey kind of pulling out during lockdown. You know, it's a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like you had another 2 months to decide there, Jack. Relax, like, you know, see how you feel in September 14th when everybody's going back training.
Yeah, so the timing is weird. Connor's definitely right on that. The timing's weird with Paul Clark. It's not a year where you would be, you know, it's definitely unusual, isn't it?
It seems like something that was going to happen anyway to me. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but like, if he's deciding it now at a stage where Dublin, even if they are doing any limited training that they're not supposed to be, but that he's decided, like, he probably might have seen from a long way off that, like, the relationship between himself and Desi Farrell wasn't going to be the same as it was with Jim Gavin, which is fine. Just like, there doesn't have to be any animosity there. Sometimes it just works out that way. But it struck me as odd timing that he decided to do it in the middle of the summer when they haven't meant to be, you know, training together for the last, I don't know how many months.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. The GAA's National Match Officials Manager, Donald Smith, he's a former Meath player. He says that the introduction of the water breaks has been a success from a refereeing perspective. And his quotes are, he says, "It's been a plus for us because it's taken away the Mayor Ishkas from the field. We don't have that conflict of people running onto the field nearly every stoppage. There is a limit of the people who can be on the pitch enclosure, and that has helped refereeing too." And I don't know, I'm starting to turn around. I know people are saying that this breaks momentum, but sure, it's actually less time than a lot of the injuries and the physio coming on and doing it. Like, I mean, I do take the point, the Mayor Ishkas just running in and running out like lunatics every time there's a break in play, that can cause different kind of, I don't know, number one, it's an eyesore, and it can cause little stoppages, as some of them, as we know in Gaelic football, as they drag their arses, as Eamon Fitzmaurice said about Tony McEntee, drags their arses back, blocking up parts of the pitch for quick kickouts, Conan.
And there's often injured players as well who are doing the Muirisky role that day and, you know, can't help themselves but get involved sometimes, or, you know, have to put it back and forward or say something when they're going in. And, like, yeah, the only thing that I actually don't like about the water breaks is, and sometimes it's going over the allocated minute that they're given. It's just there's a bit of overcoaching going on. It's like another opportunity for coaches to come down and start giving their say again and huddle everybody up. And
yeah,
start.
But in the televised games I've seen now, I haven't seen any of the minutes being dogged too much. You know, it looks to be pretty strict in those games.
Yeah, well, there you go. I was watching an underage game last night, and then you could just hear like this team talk that's going on during a water break, and it's like, oh, we're in the middle of the half, let it go, like, you know.
Yeah. What happens, Connor, if you're gasping for water after 10 minutes? Can a Mayor Ishkas throw you in your own bottle at that stage? It just has to be at 15 minutes.
No, it has to be, because I was thinking about that this very weekend, Wooly. Like, you know, on Saturday and Sunday, it was absolutely roasting. We were playing a game on Saturday, for example. Now, I didn't need it, but I was thinking that before the game. I was like, what if I need a drink of water after? Because there was no breeze. It was like 25 degrees. But you just have to wait. It hasn't been a big issue so far. Like, I found it absolutely fine. The only thing I'll say, but this is completely on me, is that, like, when you're used to returning to a pit, you're not used to a water break. So I automatically get into position that I would at the start of a half, at start of a game or a start of a half, whereas the game is resuming at a kickout. So, like, that takes a bit of getting, like, I've been caught out a couple of times just because, you know, you expect the ball to be thrown in, and then all of a sudden your man is making a sprint for a kickout, and he's like, oh, heck, I forgot about that. But that's just on, we're about 4 or 5 games into water break. So, like, it's just takes a bit of getting used to. But in my instances anyway, the ref doesn't let you dog it. You know, as in, you're at the side of the pitch. It's not as if they have to call you from the dress room. You're literally 30 yards away. So they're timing it. They have a minute on, and they're blowing the whistle at the end of it. And there's been no resistance to it so far. Everybody just has their drink. I do agree with Conan in that, like, the manager probably thinks that they have to do some coaching, or sometimes they don't. But like for my experience, it's been fine so far, and less kind of impactful on a game than I might have thought before they were introduced, to be honest.
Yeah, that's interesting that it resumes from a kick out or from wherever the referee decided. I presume it's when the ball goes out to play and it is a kick out. So that's it. Your natural thing, Colin, is to go back into your position where players just simply have to be thinking when it's over is where's my man rather than let's get back to my position.
And it is, it's hard to know that, like, yeah, because Connor says you're used to it being in the middle, but like sometimes I've seen somebody go down injured and it's going on a bit long, so the ref will then call a water break. It's a sensible thing to do at that stage, but
right.
So then you don't know where in the pitch the balls are, which be a free kick from or whatever, like, you know, so it does take a bit of switching on.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So good news for Derry, Conan, is Shane McGuigan is practicing on his right foot. it's funny when players like this, the penny drops. Like I was 22, I think, when the penny dropped, when I went into the forwards, or 23, and realised, like, Shane McGuigan's been a corner forward pretty much, or a forward all his life. The penny should have dropped a long time ago for him. And like, I know his left is absolutely sensational and he probably gets away with it, but at the very top level, he's given Gavin Devlin, who's the Slocknail new manager, I didn't actually realise that, he's with them. And Shane McGuigan says, over lockdown, you have ample time in your hands. I know I was maybe a bit one-dimensional off my left foot. It can only take me so far. So I've tried to bring this into my game. I'm happy with the 2 points. So he scored 2 points off his right in the last league game. He says, before the lockdown, Gavin Devlin has been with me 15 minutes before every training, making me use my right foot. Then any chance I get during training sessions, I'll use it. Isn't it weird that a forward, like, I mean, Christ almighty, if I was to take over under-10s tomorrow, the very, very first thing I would talk to them about would be to kick with both feet. How is this not being coached? Like, honest to God. Like, it's so bizarre that a player would reach the level he has and in this day and age and have no right foot and need Gavin Devlin to come in to encourage him.
Yeah. So, like, Paul Bradley's actually the manager. Gavin Devlin's on helping out Paul Bradley. He's a Slackney legend who would be very balanced off both feet as well. So I'd say, like, he's probably been in his ear too. He was a lovely kicker of the ball. Like, he played a bit with Derry, but it is strange. I think it's probably just, you know, when you see big men coming through underage and, like, you know, it's very easy for them to just run over the top of people and then they struggle a little bit because you can't do that at senior level. When you're Shane McGuigan growing up and you're winning, like, you're winning all these titles with St. Pat's and Slocknail, like, you know, it's very easy for him. Like, it just keeps doing what he's doing and now he has to start learning. I remember in 2003 when Paddy Bradley ripped Tyrone apart. They drew in the first round of the Ulster Championship. He scored 1-6. And Joe Brawley, I'll never forgive Joe Brawley afterwards. He was just talking about how left-footed he was, and everybody in the country knows that, and it's criminal for Tyrone to let that happen. And then Bradley wasn't nearly as effective as the next day, like, you know, and he had to start really practicing off his right then as well. But it augurs well that maybe Shane McGuigan's on the same path as Paddy.
Yeah, it definitely does. Jeez, Brawley has got some neck when he had only had a left foot himself, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, Christ. Even like, sure, we were watching those old games when he caught on to his right foot, he was still looking to shoot with his left.
Here's another thing as well. And do you remember we watched the 1997 Ulster final? Mm. And Brawley had a bit of a nightmare that day. He was the Cavan wing back, went back on him, and he kept him unbelievably quiet. Brawley got an All-Star that year. Can you believe that? He got an All-Star in 1997 for an Ulster quarterfinal and an Ulster semi-final, and then a bottle job in the final. Is that not the handiest All-Star anybody has ever gotten?
there were some strange ones. If you go back in the 90s and 80s, there were a few. I think the league must have been weighted way more heavily.
It was weighted.
Had to be.
That was over the winter, so I can only assume that Brawley lit it up in the league, because he definitely didn't do anything that day.
Oh, but actually, you're right. I'm going to have to take this back, because Derry would have won the league that year. Derry were dominating the league that year, and I think that's why they were favourites for the All-Ireland. So look, I'm taking that back, Joe. Maybe he shot the lights out when no one else cared in the league, right? So I'm still going to put the boot in a little bit. Just on the shame of getting left, and I can remember when the penny dropped to me, and I'm sure I've said this on the show before, and I didn't know where I was going with my left, and I had some terrible technique. I looked terribly awkward. I even used to throw the ball from my right hand across onto my left foot, and it just looked so awkward. I was pulling my left foot across my body, and I was just all over the place. And just one day, I just stopped myself before training, was kicking around, and I went, right. It was like this light bulb moment. It says, what technique do you do? I never actually thought about this because it just seems natural off your right foot. What do you do to kick off your right foot? And I slowed down the technique. I dropped the ball down onto my foot and I whipped around it on my right foot. Kicked the score, whatever. And then I turned around and says, right, do this really, really slowly and do the exact same thing off your left. And then I did it and I just dropped the ball down off my left. It feels really unnatural and swung around it. Didn't have a great contact. And then just repeated and repeated and repeated using my technique off my right, the very same on my left. And within the space of, I don't know, like one season, even though my Colin Brown discouraged me from using my left, which is incredible, in training. And I remember I scored 2 points in the championship against Offaly in Croke Park in the first half against Offaly with my left. And after both scores, I waved over at Brown because he had banned me off kicking with my left. it's fair to say me and Brown didn't get on too well, but I was pissed off. Like, I'm here trying to do the right thing, practicing off my left foot in training. And because some are going, you know, away and missing, I was told not to do it. I should have been encouraged to do that. You know what I mean? But that's the only advice I have. If you're practicing off your left, sit down. Well, don't sit down, stand up, actually analyze the technique from your right and just move the whole thing across to your left and do the exact same thing. Have you both tried to improve your left feet, or can you not teach an old dog new tricks at this stage?
That's really interesting because I'm completely different. I think my left is decent, but it's because it's not the same as my right. The technique, I don't know what that says about my right foot, but the technique is just a bit more of a pendulum, like the leg's straight and it feels cleaner, whereas I feel like I've got too much control of my right and I'm trying different things every time I kick the ball. But then maybe that's why you're a county player and I never was.
I ended up, funnily enough, on my bad side with my left being more accurate on that side than my right, because I don't know why. I wasn't trying to put my boot through it. I always seem to get a nice kind of a softer kind of contact on it. But anyways, look,
your range was probably shorter, Wooly, was it?
What?
Your range was shorter. You wouldn't go for a point with your left from 40 yards, whereas you might go with your right because you didn't trust to kick it that far. Maybe would that be why? Maybe that's it.
Yeah, whatever way my left foot wasn't. Maybe I was trying to do too much kind of spin on my right, where I was being more. Maybe I should have then brought my technique on my left and brought it back over onto my right. Right, there's some live stream scamming, lads. I don't know if you've seen this. It's happening a lot down in Cork. So I just wanted to give that a shout out to anybody listening, not to be fooled. So Knocknacree club officials said on their Twitter account that one of their matches was targeted by scammers. They said on Twitter, it seems to be a thing at the moment that certain scumbags, they're not holding back, are claiming to live stream GAA matches, including our own. Do not give these people your credit card details. And this is an interesting thing that especially for people of an older generation that wouldn't have younger family members there to help them out, because these things are daunting for people that from an older generation. And the minute they see live stream GAA match, I presume they're just going to click on it, Conan. You know, so it's actually very, very cynical. If these scumbags, as Knocknacree have called them, and they're right, Aerog and Cork have said the same thing. We've been informed of a scam by fraudsters on YouTube trying to scam people out of their credit card details. So listen, anybody listening, if you're not sure, don't be clicking on it. Like, I mean, or else get a family member, a younger family member to help you out. I don't really know what else to say other than that, Connor.
Just tell them, like, I was thinking that, Wooly, as well, is that like, you know, you make a good point there about, you know, people who mightn't be used to kind of accessing live streams and stuff, because you could say to them, well, only trust it's either going to come, say in Cork, for example, it's either going to come for the county board, I think the Irish Examiner are streaming games, or that the clubs themselves, you know, might be doing something on Facebook Live. So I suppose the first thing to do is not to trust anyone outside of those people. But it's really it's just bad form, isn't it? It's just terrible to hear that people are trying to make a quick buck out of that, because they know that, to be honest, they know that the appetite is there. Like, as in, I think every county board has got, you know, their like something like Mayo GAA TV have here, and then like you also have, like, I'd say nearly every club is trying to stream, you know, some games to a certain degree as well. So, you know, people will be going looking for that, and it's awful to think that there's people willing to scam, you know, proper GAA people out of their money by duping them like that. But that's I suppose the only thing you can say is just to rely on trustworthy sources, and if you're not sure, you know, as you said, just get a family member to help you out and make sure to set it up right.
Yeah, exactly. Big shout out to Zach too. He who's become the second highest AFL appearances for Irish players. He's on 198. He's just gone ahead of Ty Kennelly, who must have been on 197. I've done the maths there. Jim Steins is still way out on his own on 246. Apparently, Zach would have to play for three more seasons to pass out Jim Steins. So I can't see how Well, maybe. I know this is his last year with Geelong, but they're keen to keep him on. But again, Zach Toohey, a complete machine, a physical freak, a specimen, never got injured until last year and just racked up, what was it, 174, 178 consecutive appearances, just completely unreal. And when he hits 200 appearances, only 5% of all AFL players ever reach 200 appearances. Well, like, you put it into that context, it's just an incredible achievement from Zach. Fella that I've known since he was only a young fella in Portlaoise, and everyone in Portlaoise is very proud of what he's done out there and in the top five, in the 5% of players in the AFL to reach 200 caps. Congratulations to him. One final one before we have a look ahead to the games at the weekend. Pádraic O'Hara's interview last weekend. So this was a classic, and I didn't see this for Monday's show. So he's speaking to Mike Finnerty. Ballina hammered Clare Morris by 10 points. And, like, I mean, Ballina are the big traditional club in Mayo. Like, I mean, I have a very bad experience of Ballina losing to them in an All-Ireland final by a point. So, like, I mean, I'd always keep an eye out, even though it might hurt me to see how Ballina are doing. So they've slipped off the radar completely. They haven't been in a final since 07. They won it in 07. Obviously won that All-Ireland club in 05 from the 04 season. And they're coming back, as Connor pointed out last weekend. They're coming back with a good younger team. So they've obviously gone back to the drawing board and on their way back. So he was interviewed by Mike Finnerty after the game. And he says... the usual Mike Finnerty question to Pádraic O'Hara was, you know, you've got Knockmore next or whatever. And O'Hara says, we'll go out and beat them in 2 weeks. And then there was an awkward silence as Finnerty couldn't believe what he's just heard. And he says, I love it. Any particular reason? No, says Pádraic O'Hara. And Finnerty goes, just because it's the way Stephenites are looking at this championship, it doesn't matter who, where, is that the mindset? And O'Hara says, just because we'll beat anyone. Or just because we'll beat anybody we come out against this year, simple as. So, like, I mean, a man after my own heart, Connor, like, I mean, not afraid to put his neck on the line. I actually think speaking like that gives you confidence. Like, I mean, if, you know, I don't think there should be anything feared from saying we'll go out and beat them next year. In some way, in my mind, that would make me more confident. I could put my neck on the line here. We have to do it now.
Like, it completely depends on the individual, Willie. I love it. Like, you know, like, anyone who saw Pádraic O'Hara on Ultimate Hell Week earlier on this year knows that he's a fairly straight talker. But, like, he's the type of guy, no more than yourself. Like, a lot of people have said, oh, you know, Knockmore will be pinning this to the... They obviously can't pin it to the dressing room wall, so maybe the wall of the stand before their game. But, like, Pádraic O'Hara will love that. He'll love, like, you know, people... Yeah. You know, might be worried about any additional pressure. He'll absolutely relish it. That's why he was saying what he was saying. You know, it's just a pity. Like, they're so Balnav had a great start. Knockmore have also had a great start. So they're both through. They're both through on 4 points. So the game that they're playing in a couple of weeks' time, while you know there's bragging rights at stake because you know they're only a few miles away from each other. It's a big rivalry, Balnav and Knockmore, especially in the mid to late 90s. I think the two of them reached All Ireland Club Finals at the time. But, you know, the both of them are going to be through to the quarterfinals anyway, and they'll do very well, the two of them, to reach the final, given the other teams, you know, Westport, Castlebar, whoever comes out of that group, Brafey, Ballintubber and Balladreamer in the draw as well. So they'll do well to meet in the final. It's just a pity that there's not more at stake for this game. But yeah, I loved the comment, Willie, no more than yourself. But it's just, you mentioned there Ballina being kind of the kingpins, or they've always had a kind of an attitude, a kind of cockiness and arrogance, and they probably justified it, but they haven't lost it since, let's say, you know,
right.
They haven't been in the final in that long, but they haven't lost it. Just a quick story, like we played them a couple of years ago in the league, and the game was at like 12 o'clock on a Sunday morning. So we arrived at 11 o'clock. Ballina had taken over our dressing room. They laid out all the jerseys in the dressing room, and they took out, you know how people get tick about if somebody takes the goal closer to, you know, the dressing room to warm up, because that's the home team. So they'd taken that as well. So we had to throw them out of our dressing room, and then they responded by playing this big loud music from their own dressing room just before the game. First time I've ever heard it from an opposition dressing room. But to be fair to them, they backed it up and they bet us, and they've gone on to loads since. So they've loads about them at the moment to back up that kind of attitude and that kind of arrogance that they've traditionally had. And listen, like, the way they're going as well, it's not just Pádraic O'Hara that's talking about them like that. They could go a long way. They could even win it. So, but yeah, no, like I think it's it's brilliant and really refreshing to hear somebody come out and talk like that, even though it was funny to see how awkward Mike Finnerty was with the silence afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. We'll talk to Padraig O'Hara definitely over the course of the club season. Right, we'll be back and we'll have a look ahead to the games at the weekend.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? Mm. It happens, yeah. And it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving, and I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show didn't look great, there was, maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering if he had the same match as me. He was kind of making out dirty, but unlucky to lose. Like, let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure,
50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name. Yeah, so the games at the weekend, lads, on TV on Friday night. Friday night always has a nice football game on, lads, doesn't it? Well, the last couple of weeks it had that hurling game on the week before. This weekend it's Kilcoo versus Mayo Bridge. Kilcoo obviously in the same boat as Ballyboden, where Anthony Rainbow had said that, you know, the lockdown came at a great time for them to get over the disappointment of their All-Ireland semi-final. Kilcoo obviously have to get over losing an All-Ireland final after extra time, wasn't it? It was, of course, after extra time. In a really nail-biting game. So that would have been heartbreaking for them, even though in a weird way I talked about Ballina, us losing to Ballina in 04, 05. That's heartbreaking for me because we didn't perform on the day. At least Kilcoo know they went up against three in a row All-Ireland champions and rattled them. I think it'll be easier for Kilcoo mentally to get over that, you know, than Portlaoise in 05 when you just have that terrible regret of not performing on the day, you know. Like, I mean, I think that's definitely a thing. Mayo Bridge are interesting. I remember when I was playing, obviously during the noughties, Mayo Bridge were the big team in Down. They won 5 in a row and they won 8 in 10 years. You'd call it the Benny Coulter era. So okay. It's no surprise that at all. Like, I mean, Kieran McKeever is their manager now. I think Kieran McKeever, maybe a little bit like Gavin Devlin, was in with them 1 year helping out and then kind of got promoted up a little bit the following year. So interesting to see how that game pans out, Conan.
Yeah, and McKeever also has Dennis Hollywood in, who would have coached of Armagh. So I think they've got a pretty good setup going there. And like, a lot of exciting noises coming out of Mayo Bridge. We all know about Kilcoo, and like, I think lockdown has really suited them, because even just from a physical point of view, having to go from an All-Ireland final straight into a league, straight into a championship, and, you know, just playing all year round, like, this is great for them. But just from a Mayo Bridge point of view, like, Corey Quinn is one of the most exciting players in Down football. Like, he came off the bench against Cork just before lockdown, scored 1-2, sort of started him the next week against Longford, he scored 1-2. Do you know, and now he's like leading the line for them, and they have Shane Annett, who's playing midfield from him. He's now playing with Down. Just had a lot of good young players coming through. Adam Crimmins was playing full forward for the Down Miners last year, and he's apparently lighting it up. So there's a lot of good talk around there. I know the Kilcoo boys are very like anxious about this game, but, you know, if you are going to an All-Ireland final, drawing with Cora Finn, you know, you're probably going to be expected to put Mayo Bridge away here.
I think it's interesting with teams that are very successful, like Ballina. Remember, Portlaoise were massively successful in the 70s and 80s and then went the whole 90s without winning one. But during the 90s, maybe focused on underage and then started to dominate after a 10-year break. Mayo Bridge rebuilding as well. It only takes until your senior team starts falling apart before maybe you have a committee meeting, Connor, and you go, here, shit, what about those underage teams? What about those underage teams? Like, it's no coincidence that teams end up having to rebuild instead of maybe trying to keep the wheel moving all the time.
Yeah, it's a big kick up there. It's like a lot of club, probably for Ballina because of the size of the town. I would say the same for Portlaoise as well, that you're just, you know, we'll get through the players, it'll be fine. But like, it's just then other teams with better kind of coaching systems and better structures come in ahead of you, and then it makes you realise that, wow, you know, we have to do the exact same thing, even though our playing numbers are going to be a bit bigger than that. But I suppose the one thing you can say is you'd be fairly confident, Willie, no more than I would be, for the bigger clubs in Mayo, for example, that when they do get their act together, because of the size of the, you know, playing numbers that they have available to them, that they're going to be back on top as well at some stage.
Yeah, yeah, it's a numbers game, definitely. On Sunday then, on TG Cahir, is Kilruane McDonagh versus Loughmore Castellini. Loughmore, obviously, is the McGrath brothers' club, and they won it in 13, then lost the final in 14, but haven't been back in the final since, which is a strange one. Because obviously, well, the age profile of the McGraths would make you think that they'd be around, you know, for a few more years, or for until now at least, or a few more years after now. Kilruane haven't won it since 85. They won the All-Ireland Club that season, interestingly enough. So that's the first game on TG Cahir. I'm not even going to ask either of the two of you anything on that, unless you've done a little bit of looking in.
And just say no.
And that's it. Oliver Plunkett versus Rahini is the deferred game. This is an interesting one because Oliver Plunkett can go down if they lose it. Rahini can qualify if they win it. Am I right in saying that? Unless there's a very big surprise in the other game where Castleknock beat Kilmacud Crokes, which probably won't happen, Conor.
Well, like, there's no relegation, actually, so I was surprised that they're showing this game, because, like, you know, Plunkett's wouldn't be one of the big hitters. I actually thought they would show the Kilmacud Crokes against Castleknock, just, you know, obviously Castleknock got to the final a couple of years ago, and they need to win to go through. Rahini obviously had that shock win against them last week, so I don't know, it's an interesting decision, but it will be good to see Rahini. Obviously, like, everyone knows about Howard and Fenton, and, like, Sean Bugler's is playing against Plunk or playing for Plunkett's, and he scored 1-4 against Crooks, so there will be a bit of eye candy on you, I suppose. But I don't know. I think maybe could have picked a better game, not to rain on their parade.
Not to mention the best eye candy of them all, Bernard Brogan. Like, give me a break here, Conan. You're talking about eye candy and you're not talking about Bernard Brogan. This is outrageous. So they played each other in last year's championship. Rahini won 217-210. Brian Fenton kicked 6 from play. And you're right, Conan. Just seeing Brian Howard and Brian Fenton play for someone that's not Dublin and guaranteed to win. And, like, just seeing how Brian Fenton, you know, how his role changes with his club. And does he try to take on more responsibility? 6 from play is sensational last year, Conor, from midfield. It's just interesting. I think Howard plays centre back. Fenton obviously plays midfield for Rahini. It's just interesting to see how they, you know, the way with Dublin, they all have a role to play, and there's no huge kind of, you know, if you try to be a prima donna or a big shot, you know, you're not doing your job. Whereas with your club, you have that little bit more freedom. It would just be interesting to see how to take that freedom, you know, and use it.
Yeah, and like you say there about, like, playing, you know, being a prima donna, not being a prima donna for Dublin, and like Brian Fenton kicking 6 from play would suggest that he might be for Rahini, but Brian Fenton could kick 6 from play for playing for Dublin as well. He's that good. Like, I was just thinking, I was about to, because I haven't seen Rahini, obviously, I was just about to ask where Brian Howard plays, because I was just like, would there be a better midfield partnership in the country than at club level than Fenton and Howard playing together? I'm not sure, but it's
I
just
would say like, no.
I wouldn't think so. But judging from the reports I've seen, that like they're really getting their act together. Like you'd think that those two on their own, you know, would nearly be enough to kind of backbone a title challenge. But they've obviously got plenty enough around them too, and they're starting to kind of hit the height. So although there's not Anthony at stake, or not really Anthony at stake in terms of Plunkett's on Sunday, It's interesting to watch that, you know, just the prospect of watching Fenton and Howard at club level alone is enough for me to want to tune in anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think RT have any game. At least they haven't advertised any game yet on Saturday. Usually they show a game on Saturday night. So their games on TG Cahir. Loads of club action. So check the relevant county board streaming advertisements, because there's Kilkenny Hurling Championship, Tip Hurling Championship, Carlow Hurling, Dublin Football, Donegal Football, Roscommon Football, Galway Football, Armagh Football, Longford Football. Loads of club action. So whatever county you want to watch, go onto the county board website and see what one they're streaming. And that's it from us, lads. We don't have any more to say. We're going to leave it there. We'll be back on Monday as usual with a review of the weekend. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd still go. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.